You're listening to the Builderpedia podcast, the only podcast that takes you on the whole property journey, from planning, design, building, selling, and everything in between. Along the way, we'll introduce you to our network of friends and colleagues who are experts in their field. Now, here are your hosts, Matt and Jeannie from Ballast Point.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Builderpedia. In today's episode, we'll be discussing a topic that's critical to the success of any building project, how to choose the right builder. Building a home is a huge investment, and by selecting the right builder, that can make all the difference in terms of the quality of the finished product, the timeline, and your overall experience. We'll be providing you with expert insights and tips to help you navigate this crucial decision-making process. So sit back, relax, and let's get started. Joining me today, I have my co-host with me, Matt. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
Hi, Jeannie. Good, good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Getting back into recording.
Yeah. It's good to get, we've sort of done two almost on the trot, and we're starting to release episodes again, which is great. So I'm excited. We got Builderpedia back on the road, which is great.
Before we dive into today's episode, we'd like to share our weekly inspirational person. Matt, do you have someone in mind for us today?
Yeah, so I've got a funny story because the last time I... So I'm obsessed with technology and I have been using OpenAI since the day when it came out. And so last time, on the last episode, my inspiration was the guy who was behind launching ChatGPT. But since then, I've been doing a bit of reading, and I read a book by a guy called Mo Gawat. I'm going to stuff up the pronunciation, but Mo Gawat, and he's an Egyptian entrepreneur. And for a time, he worked at Google X, and Google X is like the skunk works for Google. It's all the sort of marginal projects, and amongst those, obviously, is Google's version of AI, and he was the leader of business strategy. And his book, which is called Scary Smart, was very disturbing. Made me very afraid of what's coming. But it was well written. But in the end, his conclusion is we are stuck with AI. It's coming. It's going to be smarter than us. It's already smarter than us in a lot of things. We've got to nurture it, and we've got to look after it. We're not going to outcompete it. We're not going to keep it in a box. So we need to teach it how to be a good AI is the message. But it's quite scary what is coming that most people aren't even aware of. Anyway, I've talked enough. Jeannie, who inspired you this week? Who's your inspiration?
Well, I think just to respond to your interest in the OpenAI, I guess my question for you is, how do you see using artificial intelligence in Ballast Point in the work that we do in terms of creating houses for people?
Well, I think, so my experience with OpenAI, I use it every day. It's fantastic, but it's like having like a stone tool. It's a very blunt instrument, but you can see the possibilities already. And it will change any algorithmic task will be gone very soon because of the speed that it's moving. Yeah, I have no doubt we'll be using AI in design, and we'll be using AI in project management, and we'll be relying on AI for our accounting. Like, there's absolutely no doubt as to how long that takes. I don't know, but yeah, absolutely. It's going to change.
Yeah, it will speed things up.
Absolutely. It's going to get rid of repetitive tasks like preparing council documents, which you know all about, Jeannie.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, it's going to change planning. It's already changing planning because already we have platforms like Archistar that change the way we process lots of information about development planning. So it's already there. Architects are already using it. But we've gone way off topic right now.
Okay, so for my inspirational person, I'm reading a book called Home Comforts by Cheryl Mendelson. And I found the topic particularly interesting for me on a personal level because she's someone who comes from a background where she grew up with women in her life that was very into like housekeeping and I guess some of like the more traditional womanly roles in life. And I'm just reading about it because it's just so different from like what I've been exposed to. And I think recently I've just been dealing with a little bit of overwhelm. So I think reading this book has been kind of calming, but also I'm trying to calculate in my head, how do you do everything at once? Like there's so much to do to keep everything balanced. So I don't know. It's just a bit of food for thought.
What are the strategies that are in the book? Like what are the, give us an example.
Well, I actually think like running a household is kind of like running a business in a way in order, like you have to do a little bit all the time. But I think for me, like why I get overwhelmed is because I see like this huge thing and I don't really have a strategy sometimes to do things. So you're just kind of like hacking at it as you go. But I think a bit of like space and chilling out and having a bit of a plan for it is helpful and beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm starting to see like the crossovers in terms of how to attack things that again is repetitive and it keeps coming and it's not going to stop. There's always going to be work to do, but it's how you do it.
Yeah, I think start engaging with AI to help you with all of those bills and other things. I mean, that's something that I mean I've never been great at. I get a lot of help, but yeah, absolutely. I remember speaking to David Savardi, who's a fantastic joiner. He's got the most amazing joinery workshop that I've ever seen or imagined. And he's got robots that bring sheets of plywood or particle board or whatever onto a line.
Yeah.
He's got spray booths. He's got workshops where he's got people handcrafting things. And I just said to him, how do you do it? Like, what's the secret? Like, how do you do all this? Like, you're like Willy Wonka. Like, what is, how is this possible? And he just, without hesitation, he just said systems. It's all about having a system.
Yeah, totally.
So that's something that I've taken on board and having good systems in place. It's hard. And in the future, I'm hoping this helps and technology will help. But good systems aren't just available for download. Like good systems are still a human endeavor that take time and energy to create, but they're worth creating because once you have the system working, you really do see multiples of return in terms of benefits.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to take a step back in order to have more.
Exactly.
To create those systems instead of just hacking at it.
It's hard to create a system when you're in the thick of trying to get things done, you know, and it's actually harder to, it's even harder to pull your team away from what they're out trying to do to stop and create a system. But sometimes you have to, and we've got planned our first kind of offsite day soonish. I'm not sure. I don't think we've got a date, but we actually need to.
Yeah, I know some companies do that. Yeah.
But it's hard. I mean, yeah, there's never a good time. You just got to do it.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's my inspirational person for the week. And I think now we're ready to jump into the questions and the content for today's episode. So starting from the beginning, let's say that I'm a homeowner with a set of plans for construction ready to go. What do I need to consider before I start looking for a builder?
So the first thing you need to do is make sure that you've got a clear scope, and you may think that your plans are the scope, but sometimes plans can be a bit fuzzy. And a lot of the times, and I've seen this because I've had potential clients send me a set of plans and they're kind of inferring that they're just not having any luck finding a builder or getting a quote. I'm looking at the plans and I'm kind of going, I don't understand what it is you want me to do. It's not clear from these plans what the scope is And sometimes even if you understand the plans, you kind of need to explain in a scope document what, particularly in a renovation, what is...
Yeah, what's existing and what's new.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's obvious on the plans what's existing, what's new, but in terms of what you actually need done might be quite particular or not. And the clearer you can make it, the better. Sometimes the plan is for a full DA included and it's got fencing on it and it's got gardens and it's... So that's what I mean when you create a precise scope, because maybe you don't want the builder to worry about landscaping and planting trees and other things. So make it really clear with the documents.
Is your suggestion for that process to be just a document, or do you think it's worth spending the time to communicate and like getting on a call or something with someone to explain things more clearly?
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably an important thing when you, the way you approach a builder is important. But before you do that, you want to have a clear set of documents. You also need one other thing, I think. What you need is a clear set of objectives. You need to tell them what's important to you. So if the project fails because if it won't be done in a particular time frame, then you need to put that into your scope document. You need to put that into your, you need a set of objectives. You need to make it clear to the builder whether this is a job that you want done on a budget, whether it's a job where you're expecting the highest quality outcome. And probably if you want the highest possible quality, you're trying to do it on a tight budget and you've got a tight time frame, then you've probably got to think about which one is most important.
Because I know usually with our processes at Ballast Point is that after that initial scope conversation, we produce a return brief.
Yes.
So yeah. I think that's where you finalize between the builder and the homeowner exactly the scope.
Absolutely. But I think it's important that, and our experience is that some potential clients know exactly what they need and others, it doesn't seem like maybe they thought about what they actually need. And I guess we're talking about engaging a builder particularly. So we're presuming that, hey, we've got a set of documents from an architect and we're trying to find a builder. So maybe, whereas I guess what we do at Ballast Point is mostly design and build. So it's a little bit different, but we're trying to provide advice, general advice for selecting the builder based on the fact you've already got a designer on board. Yeah. So I think they're the main things, but I think you touched on how to engage. And there's a couple of things that I think are really important. One is to just be transparent about what it is you need. I guess maybe that's my nature, is to be transparent and upfront. And I mean, you don't have to disclose every last detail, but you certainly want to create a very transparent scope and brief. And you just want to be upfront with what you need. You don't want to keep cards close to your chest. I think it's better to just be upfront because you'll get a better response. You'll get a more, you're more likely to, for someone to take the job seriously.
From my perspective as a client, if I'm approaching a builder and I want some work done, I would agree with you that the approach should be to be more open about what you want. Like, why would someone not want to be open with what they want?
I think some people like worry that if they disclose their budget, that will give an advantage to the builder. I don't really understand it. I guess people come into it like, yeah, it would be a bit of a negotiation. I can't relate to it.
Yeah, sure. I'm, yeah, just, but it's just from your experience, something
I've
that you've seen.
I've experienced that, and I'm like, just tell me what you need. Like, why are we playing games?
Sure, yeah.
But sometimes it's just that the client hasn't really thought about what it is that they're after. But the clearer it is, the more straightforward things are, the more, as a builder, you know exactly what they're after, the easier it is to just get on with it and create a quote, create a proposal for them.
Okay, so that's step one. So moving on, what strategies should I, as a homeowner who's looking to build, use to research the right builder for me?
Okay, so number one, if you can get a recommendation. I mean, I, again, this is coming from my experience of finding subcontractors, a recommendation from a trusted source is gold. Like, that's 100 times better than lots of recommendations on Facebook or whatever else.
Something personal.
Absolutely. That makes me feel like I've got someone good. If a trusted party has recommended someone, then that's what you want. So I guess you can ask people in the area who are getting work done if they would recommend who they're using, maybe when they're getting towards the end of their journey. Ask around in your community, and whether that's your kids' other parents at your kids' school or whatever that is, like if you can get a recommendation.
I think personally, a resource that I've found to be useful to find anything is your local Facebook group, like community Facebook group. A lot of people are very open with their own experiences and businesses that they've dealt with. So throwing that one out there.
But I guess that might be, okay, that's valuable, but it's not as good as someone you know and trust.
Yeah, sure.
Because people put their
There's like different interests.
If they've got a mate who's a builder and they're on a Facebook group, they're going to put their mate who's a builder and tell everyone he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And they might not tell you that they're best mates or they have a beer every Friday. So, yes, and they're all valuable. I mean, Google reviews are valuable. All those things are valuable, but nothing beats that personal recommendation. Yeah. But also understand where the recommendation comes from, because if someone's recommending their best friend who's a builder, well, have they got any experience of working with that person? So you certainly, I would use discretion. But yeah, I think all of those are community groups, your local community, whether it's a Facebook group or whatever that is. That's a great resource for finding the best people. Yeah, I would probably try those before I resort to Google searching.
And also, should you have a preference for local builders in your area?
Well, I think yes, but it's complicated. What's more important is that they do the right sort of projects for what you need. So if I need a big extension or a new house build, there's no point hiring someone who's mostly done decks and pergolas because they're a local. But
so the experience is more important.
Absolutely. I guess the thing with local builders is they're likely to have more experience in the sort of thing that you need done. And from my personal experience, if you have a house, I mean, because we're located in the inner west of Sydney, houses tend to be old, have recurring sort of damp issues, are on very much compact blocks of land. And I guess if you're a builder that works in that area, you get to know the properties. You can walk into a property and know what's going to be wrong with it or what you need to fix in it or how you go about resupporting a chimney or whatever it is, because that's property you deal with. But that doesn't mean that you're not capable of doing other work in other areas. There's great builders who are not in our area who do very good work. So it's more about the type of property and the scope of the project, and it's got to be the right tool for the right job, so to speak. Like, it's got to be the right builder that has experience in building what it is that you need built, that who can solve the problem that you need solved. That's much more important than where they're located, because you will find that licensed builders vary in ability and experience. And I guess we find that out of area builders who've built more simple extensions on large blocks of land don't understand the dynamics and the economics of building in the inner west, where suddenly you go from driving everything onto your block of land to carrying everything in by hand. It's a very different
Yeah.
Very, and a different subset of problems. Although the principles still apply, but you do, I think if you get someone local, they know how to fix chimneys. Most builders in the outer burbs don't deal with a lot of they deal with flue chimneys as opposed to brick chimneys.
So how do you go about checking references before selecting a builder? What questions should you ask?
It's funny because my experience with checking references is that people give you references assuming you're not going to ring their references. I think a lot of people skip this point. I've been surprised and shocked by the references that I have been given to follow up. I've literally had people tell me, look, they're not that good. Like, I'm like, why would someone give me a reference unless they're just blissfully unaware that I didn't
wasn't that
have a
happy
good experience. So number one tip for checking references is get 3 or 4 references, ring them all. And if you can't get through, ask for 3 or 4 more. Don't just give up because you can't get onto that person. If you get 3 or 4 references and you ring them all and no one rings you back, that says a lot. That's a big red flag, because I know a lot of our clients would make sure that they get, we have great clients, we look after them, and I feel that they would get back and make an effort. And of course, people are busy. People are overseas. But number one tip is don't skimp. Don't just try and ring. And if it's give up because it's too hard and go, oh, look, they're probably okay because they gave you references. It's surprising what references uncover. And sometimes it's what they don't say that's really critical as much as what the reference check actually says. But what questions to ask? Ask about their experience overall. Don't just ask about the quality of the outcome. Ask about whether they were
responsive and
responsive, whether they communicated, whether they knew what was happening. But fundamentally, would they, if they had their chance again, would they use this person is probably the fundamental question. But I think the other question is to just check about, just to validate that we're talking about the same thing here. What is it that they did for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you are engaging someone to build you a new house and you're getting references from people who had Pergola built, then, okay, well, you need to go back to the builder and say, look, these are all great references, but they're for something else.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not for what I'm buying.
Yeah, it needs to be an apples to apples comparison. It
needs to be relevant. It needs to be absolutely relevant. And like sometimes it is, you have to make allowances. It is a builder who maybe has done a few small jobs and they're very keen to do their first big job, but they should be upfront with you about that. And you need to know what you're taking on, because I guess a less experienced builder is more of a risk because they still haven't made a lot of the mistakes that builders make and learn from. So that should be factored in.
Well, I think that raises an interesting point, because what if you're comparing two different builders, one is more experienced and one is not as experienced, but they're keen to do the job? Would your suggestion for the client for their default to be to go with the more experienced person every time?
Oh, yes and no. Like, there's 1,000 variables in there. I think there's nothing wrong with using someone who's less experienced, because they might be keener to do a good job. They might not be resting on their experience. But yeah, I think
it depends.
It depends, like, on so many things. I think you just got to know what you're getting in for. But I think experience and reputation is a lot. If I've built up a reputation I'm not going to let a job fail. If I haven't got a reputation to protect and things are going pear-shaped, I might not have as much to lose by ditching the job. I don't know. It's a can of worms, Jeannie. I don't know the answer. I guess I rely on experienced subcontractors, definitely.
So that actually leads to an important point of using someone who's experienced, because it's important for the client to understand the processes and management structure before they decide to sign on to a certain builder. Can you explain how someone should go about finding out exactly what you're paying for if you're going to go ahead?
The thing you need to know is who is the builder, who is the person who's going to be managing your project day to day. And it might be the person you're speaking to, but it might not be. For example, I'm the licensed builder, but I have site managers on each project who look after the client, look after managing that job. So that's the person whose performance you're most relying upon as a client. So you want to know, I think they're important questions to ask. How is the job going to be staffed? Who do I call if I have a question? Who's going to update me on program? In our office, it's Malika, head of construction. He's deals with that side of it. So he's the go-to, and then he might have a site supervisor on site. So we make sure that we introduce our client to Malik so they know who they're getting.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important question, because I think sometimes there's a presumption that the person you're talking to will be there every day on site, and that's not normally the case. You need to really understand that, and who do you speak to when you have a question is important. Who's your main contact is important. So in understanding the management structure of who you're engaging is important in that case.
So let's say I now have three quotes from three different licensed builders that I like. How do I go about choosing the best one? Because I guess the common thing is just to go for the one with the lowest price.
My hot tip is you always get what you pay for, and sometimes you pay a bit more. I guess the thing that where most people trip up is they're kind of conditioned to buy appliances and things which have high margins. Construction has relatively lower margins, depending, you know. So construction margins are anything from, I guess, maybe 10, 15% up to 30, 40, maybe more, but they're never 100%. So if you're getting someone who's 20% cheaper, you got to ask some hard questions. I think it helps to analyze the quote and actually understand what's included, what's excluded, what's provisional, what's fixed. Is it a lump sum quote or is it a budget? And really understand what it is in that quote. And I guess the ultimate test for the quote is to prepare a contract based on the quote and see if the builder's happy to sign it. But I guess we've covered the reference check. So all things being equal, I think it's got to be someone you can get on for an extended period of time. That shouldn't be understated. You need someone who you can talk to. If you're already confused and you haven't had a great time in communicating, that's probably a red flag. But having said that, I think I've got a mate, Dan, who always says, if you lower your expectations, you'll be less disappointed. But I think you kind of have to allow for the fact that a builder is not normally in the service industry in the same way as your bank is or other places are.
Yeah.
They're trying to build things, and they may not be great at communicating or putting prices together. So maybe, and I've learned this, that I've learned that there are amazing tradesmen, amazing people who are just terrible at putting a quote together. They handwrite, but they're very good. Or their strength isn't paperwork, but they are incredibly experienced and talented in what they do. So you do need to make little allowances, perhaps not just go with like which submission is the most polished, particularly maybe overlook that, because some builders just won't ever be good at presentation. You know,
yeah.
it may look like a very unprofessional document in terms of the quote.
But then I guess you can also look at the portfolio and photos of the finished product as well in that instance.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look at the work they've done. I think ultimately have a look at their work and see if you can talk to their clients.
Yeah.
That they did that work for. I mean, that's the most sure way to know what you're getting. To see some of their work and, yeah, speak to the people about the experience and maybe have a look at some work that they finished a little while ago and see how it stood up. See if it's...
Is that an important point to consider as well? Like what the, I guess, if there's any warranty or whether they're happy to come back and fix things if things aren't quite right at the end, is that an important part of the contract or the proposal to consider?
Look, absolutely. Absolutely. That's very important. I guess the thing that our listeners should know is that there's a statutory warranty for licensed builders, which is, I think, 7 years in New South Wales. But it's how builders respond to that warranty, whether they sort of go, oh, look, that's not, you know, occasionally, particularly in a renovation, they'll go, oh, look, that's an existing problem. Or they could try and wriggle out of it. So it's important how they respond. It's a reasonably level playing field in terms of their statutory obligations, but how they respond and how they act. And every building will have something that isn't quite right. So it's how it's dealt with that's the most important thing.
So coming to our last question, what are some common mistakes to avoid when selecting a builder? Can you share some stories with us of when things don't go quite right?
Well, so I think the classic story is the wrong tool for the wrong job. And I had a client years ago, let's call him Gerald. I can't tell you his real name, but he had this amazing joiner, and we were building a house for Gerald and his wife. And he had this amazing joiner that he had used and was very keen for that joiner to do all of the joinery work in the house, which was a kitchen, you know, lots of robes, bathroom joinery. You know, it was a house, a four-bedroom house full of joinery, and some stuff in the living room as well, some feature stuff in the living room. And so Gerald had this joiner, and I got their quote, and their quote was less than our joiners that we're using. But Gerald was quite firm that that was, and that he liked the price, of course.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll just check out their workshop. Like, I'll just see what they're making.
And sure.
I asked to go and see. I mean, they had a personal recommendation already from Gerald, whose real name we won't reveal to protect people. But I thought, well, I'll go and check out their production. I'll check out their factory. And it was a small place in the back of Chippendale, and it was one guy with a table saw. And I'm kind of going, I don't think these guys have the capacity to deliver this project. And, of course, they made Gerald a coffee table and a few other pieces, and beautiful pieces, but done a great job, but they just weren't capable. So Gerald would not be swayed. He was adamant that I had it wrong. And of course, so we sent this joiner a contract and we didn't get an answer. So I'm following them up. And finally I just said, look, I can't get on. I said to Gerald, I can't get onto them. Like, they're not responding.
Yeah.
And of course, what had happened was they'd realized that, one, they were over their head, two, that they probably underquoted the job by a significant amount. So they went to ground, and then Gerald, but they, unfortunately, they told Gerald that they didn't proceed with the job because I hadn't paid a deposit And so he was angry at me. Said, well, I don't just send money. They haven't signed a contract and they have an invoice for a deposit. Yeah. Like we're not going to send random amounts of money like to their bank account. Like that's not how it works. But, you know, they were the wrong joiner from the outset. And of course, our joiner had to come in and
fix it up.
And start and do the job and still try and fit it into the time frame. So that put us under pressure. But I mean, it's got to be the right thing. But yeah, I mean, it's getting the documentation right. And I think in our business at Ballast Point, we spend a lot of time trying to create a coherent scope for our subcontractors. So rather than sending them a mountain of drawings, we try and define what it is that they need to provide a quote for to make it as easy as possible. So I think that's probably where I guess there have been clients who have approached us who are just not getting a quote. No one seems interested. That's definitely where it goes wrong, is where no one can understand what the scope is from the drawing. Yeah. But I guess, you know, the other thing that doesn't work is sending a request for quote to lots and lots and lots of builders and just blanket emailing lots of people hoping for a quote. If you do get quotes, you're not going to get any good ones. You really need to engage with the person, understand, have a conversation and outline your needs. We do get scattergun emails that says, hey, I need a house built. Here's the plans. Can you provide a tender within 10 days? And we don't. And sometimes it looks like it's come through a group email. Not even addressed to us. It's been BCC'd to us. And we're like, I think we might not get involved in it. Politely reply, send a polite reply, but I don't think we're going to get into this particular project because we don't even know how many other builders they've sent it to.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Matt, for sharing all of your tips with us in terms of how to find a good builder. In summary, we would just like to finish off with four main points for our listeners to take away with them. Do you want to get started on the first one, Matt?
Yeah, I added four because, I don't know, the first one is horses for courses, or as I said before, the right tool for the right job. So keep expectations that you have in line with the abilities of who you're engaging. But don't overstretch them. Get the right person. Number two is reference check and reference check again and do your homework and don't skimp on that bit. It's important. And of course, if you have a personal recommendation, that's much better. That's worth 10 references, I guess. But number three, be upfront and make it clear, make the scope clear and tell the builder what you need. Like have an open conversation and engage with them. Don't just email things hoping for the best. Number four is you get what you pay for every time. So just check the quote carefully, understand who you're engaging, understand the downside risk of what you might be getting in for, and you do get what you pay for. So make sure that you see their work and you understand what it is that you're getting. I think that's it. I don't know. Is that, Jeannie, do you feel inspired, if you were ready to build? I think you've got enough information now. What's missing? What have we missed?
I think that's a pretty good summary of how to go about the first steps of engaging a builder. And I think that we also have a blog post for the 5 tips on how to engage a builder that summarizes everything that we've discussed today as well. So I think those two are some good resources to get started on.
Yeah. And in that blog post, there's also some tips on making sure your builder's licensed and how to check their license and making sure that you are protected by fair trading and legislation. So there's some additional bits in there that we probably haven't covered as well, and as well as things we have. But
we're gonna put the podcast and the blog post together, so all the information should be in one place.
Or a link from one to the other.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much, Matt.
All right, Jeannie.
Thank you for tuning into Buildopedia. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating to help other listeners like you find our podcast. For more information, please check out the show notes and connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you.